If you enjoy this podcast, don't forget to subscribe to catch all future episodes. Also, check out our YouTube channel at youtube.com/switchboxtv for video versions of this show, plus loads more videos covering sport, music, and lifestyle. That's youtube.com/switchboxtv. This episode was recorded in October 2020.
Joined today by an artist who shot to fame with X Factor and has continued to make great pop music ever since, all the while adding more strings to his bow, acting on both the stage and screen. Delighted to be joined by Shane Ward. How are you, mate?
I'm not too bad, yourself?
I'm good, yeah. So what's 2020 been like for you so far? It's been a wonderful, productive year for us all, hasn't it?
I think we can all agree that we all feel the same about it. Like,
Really
confused, but weirdly enough, there's a lot of positive that's kind of come from doing everything at home, which I'm sure you can agree yourself.
Yeah, I think there's been a kind of it's been a time to sort of reflect, and then a sort of a time to actually get some stuff done. Maybe you've been thinking about doing for a while, and that kind of thing has been quite good.
Yeah.
So first of all, what plans were ruined by COVID-19 for you, and then what new plans emerged?
the first thing, what plans were ruined? Like every other, you know, it could be actor, singer, whatever. It was just basically jobs that were already in the books to be doing. I'm bored, literally just there, and I have 40 dates on there that I had through this year. Lots of them as gigs. Even auditions and things like that. And naturally, when everything stopped, it was like, okay, what's going to happen? So, yeah, I think just like I said, being at home, and then everyone had to try and figure out, like, you know, how and when are we going to be able to get back in the industry? Because we all know with the arts, we've not been given anything really, have we?
No,
and we've all had to kind of figure out ourselves. And we know how important the arts are, you know what I mean? Exactly. And what we do. So what we've had to do is just to keep obviously fans who are obviously scared of what's going on as well, and people that have spent the hard-earned money on to come to shows, just to reassure them that shows will be getting moved to next year. But again, that's again out of our hands, because we don't know how long this is going to be for, you know.
Exactly. So I feel like you've got to put the dates in the diary, but whether they get pushed back again,
that's literally it. And come next year as well, like, touch wood, if you know, like, let's hope it this all passes sooner rather than later. It's going to be who gets the spot filled first, you know what I mean? Because it's going to be, but it's going to be thriving as well. People are going to want to go out now to go out to all these shows that are going to be out there in arenas. And again, we don't know till probably, I don't know, April, May, June.
So we'll see. So you said you had some auditions as well. So you have more plans for more. I mean, we'll get into some of the acting you've done, but just generally, what have you? So you've been getting into more acting this year, possibly.
Yeah, it was more to be to the latter end of the year anyway, and that's unfortunately where we're at now. You know, filming one or two things now, which will come into play next year anyway. But even just with gigs and stuff like that. But yeah, the acting thing was so difficult, because what we do in this industry is it's being social. It's being right in front of somebody, you know, interacting with the audience, or interacting with the co-star that you're acting across from. Whereas I know the soaps have figured it out very good and cleverly by social distance filming, and they can edit anything to make it look like you actually stood side by side. But yeah, it was just gutting for us all. But at the same point, I've got to spend so much more time at home with my little girl. I've got a four-year-old girl. She'll be four in December. So time I'll never be able to get back again, because we don't have those daily distractions at the minute. And it's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, I was going to say congratulations on being a father. I've got three myself, and I've got a little girl. I've been a little girl last, and I just think something's... I even have the two boys before, and obviously I love them to death. something about dads and daughters is just, it just completely changes you inside. I mean, they just
have the hold of that, don't they? It's just
no chance. You've got no chance now.
Oh no, it's really funny because even friends of mine and other people that have got daughters as well, it's like that scene out of Bad Boys. We laugh about it, but it is going to be that when they bring home the first boyfriend or like girlfriend, whatever, you know, whatever makes our children happy. When the door opens, we'll be like, who are you?
Yeah, because at this point, your daughter's age 35 anyway, so it's like, yeah, there's no boyfriends before that age.
Yeah, well, that's it, yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, how have you found that that's changed your, I mean, like everything that we do, everything in our lives affects it as in our art. So how has it sort of changed the way you work as far as just music and that, what you want and what your ambitions are and that kind of thing? How has it changed you?
It was kind of like, in a way, the great reset, in a sense, because I came home when I was doing a show at the time, Band of Gold, which people remember, yeah. Big show by Kay Miller back in the day. And we were doing the stage production of it. And our final show, run of shows, was the final week in Bath. And on the first day that we got there, and then we had the show that night, we got told that all theatres are closing. So you come away for it, and for the first like 3 or 4 months, you don't do nothing. You're naturally just panicking because you know that you can't go out to do no gigs. But then as time started to go on, I spoke to my missus, who's in the industry herself, Sophie Austin. She's an actress.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So we're both completely in the same boat. So we had a great understanding about everything. And our main concern more than anything was our little girl first and foremost. And then it was like, well, if there's no gigs and there's no acting coming in at the minute, unfortunately, you know, it's earnings basically. It's our little girl's earnings. And then she if she knew, she'd be like, what are you doing with my money? But we were just like, well, you know, we've got more than enough to, you know, just to keep us going regardless. Because that's, you know, very, very, very sensible with money. But it's not nice because you want to be doing more shows. So what I decided to do was, I said to my missus, I'm going to sit in the studio. I'm going to get back to my music as well. And just really, really focus on that. And yeah, I mean, I was eating everything, basically all the biscuits under the sun as well. Like for the first 4 or 5 months, I was eating everything. But
we all did that.
Creative, and it was great. And I just, yeah. So if you hear my little girl, you might hear my little girl come past. She just got back from preschool and she seemed very lively. So I sat in the studio and I just decided, you know what? I love my music. My fan base has been so loyal with me over the years and they've been wanting me to release something for a long, long time. And I've been wanting to for so long as well. And I had everything here. I've now signed my first 4-year writing publishing deal for songwriting with Peer Publishing. And
congratulations.
Oh, thank you, dude. So that's why I'm in here all the time, so creatively show my songwriting skills, and whether it be for myself or a future album or whether it will be for other artists or pitch it, whatever. And the next thing was, we just recently just announced, I've just been signed by United Talent Agency. It's a worldwide
agency. Fantastic.
That look after, from the acting side, you can look at it, it's just ridiculous who they've got in there, but like Johnny Depp, they got like artists, like Dolly Parton, Madonna, Timbaland. Yeah, I mean, I've been so active and just so focused with my manager, Lou, for the last two and a half months, nearly 3 months. And yeah, we're just making sure that everything we do now is for next year.
Yeah.
I'm excited. I'm excited for my family, but I'm more excited for my fans as well.
It's a fantastic setup. I can see you seem to have everything you need there. So it's like, this is what I need. I need my little man cave. I need a man cave studio. Is that what you like?
It was,
like getting
yeah.
in there and yeah. Is that, I mean, do you like just getting in there, and how do you tend to write? Do you tend to get on the piano, or what? How do you do it?
Ideas tend to come to me. Like, it's amazing when you have a dream and there's a song in your dream and you're like, it's weird now because I've been saying it so much, talking about like songs that can come in your dreams. It somehow then makes it into your conscious. And every now and again, it'll just pop in there and I'll say the words in my dream. Remember this when you wake up. You wake up and you go, what was that song that I was doing? It was a smash. It was a great melody. yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's how that came about, isn't it? That's a Paul McCartney thing.
Do you know what I mean? So for me, it's more than just, I can just be in the kitchen. I could be making a cup of tea or a coffee for the missus, and she'll probably hear this and says, he doesn't make me nothing. I do. I make it all the time. But I literally, I could be making a coffee and a bit of melody would come in, and I'll just say, I've got to go for a minute and I'll run in here. I mean, I'll get it onto my voice notes on my phone, and then I'll come in here straight away and get my microphone and just press record, and I'll get that melody down, and then I'll just work my way around it. So.
Yeah, I do that. I mean, they love that when you just disappear off and you're like, my wife comes home sometimes, she's a nurse, she comes home sometimes and she's like, the house is a complete mess and nothing's done. I'm like, she's like, yeah. What have you done? I've written a song. It's like Magic Beans, Jack yeah. the Beanstalk, you know, it's like.
But yeah, but they say, yeah, well done to you, but look at the house.
But look at the house. Now get the dinner on.
Yeah, exactly. I think we just like need a boom mic and a recorder. So we can
just multitask, yeah. Exactly, yeah. I wanted to ask you about your childhood and your musical upbringing, because I know you're from an Irish family, the same as myself. And music's such a huge part of Irish culture. And is it something that was there around you? Or what was it like, your upbringing in terms of music?
It was amazing. My family has always played music as far as I can remember. I'm one of seven children. I got three brothers, three sisters, a twin sister. So yeah, Irish and country music was playing all the time. You know, you got the Dubliners, you got the Wolf Tones, you got Foster and Allen, I'm good friends with now. Finbar Fury, absolute legend as well. And you know, he goes to the country like Patsy Cline, Tammy Wynette, Kenny Rogers, Brenda Lee. So all these countries and Irish songs that was always playing. But then I'd have like Dr. Hook playing, and like then we'd have like a bit of Queen playing, and it was quite a mixture. And of course, Tom Jones was always playing. when we smelled
well,
the
that's not unusual.
Once you smell the hairspray, that's when the music come on. That's when you knew when the parents were going out. but that was it. Just always been around music and just developed the absolute love for it. All of us.
And what sort of age did you start performing?
I recall standing in the back garden with my twin sister Emma, who sings beautiful, like very similar to Eva Cassidy. Like she never pursued anything. But constantly tells me that she's better than me. It's not my favorite. But I remember both of us standing on a crate in the back garden just singing up to the sky, and it's like, and that's probably at the age of five or six. But wow. I would say like the first time I really started to really get engaged with it was when I was in high school, and I think like a lot of schools years ago, when they wasn't doing pretty well, they used to merge. So three schools joined together, mine and two other schools in Manchester, and we became St. Peter's Catholic School. And with one of those schools, it brought performing arts, and I was like, what is this? And loved it from the get-go, when I got to be like Tony and West Side Story, then a Caliban Story, and then like talent shows as well, and just performing songs. And that just like kind of like catapulted me into kind of like wanting to do more. And yeah, and that was it.
You got the bug at that age, and that's it.
Massively got the bug at that age, and then yeah, there was things that took me into more singing later on.
Yeah, so you actually were doing some of the sort of musicals and acting, kind of. That was I suppose at school it's a natural first release, or you know, to do that kind of stuff, isn't it? So that's the first sort of chance you get to do school plays. Yourself,
because you know that you love singing, you know that you love listening to music. But when you go into something like that, you can see other people and you're like, oh, they like what I like. Oh, they're doing what I'm doing. And you just completely vibe off each other and feel each other's energy. Like, and yeah, I loved it. You know, I think everyone, if they went to a performing arts school or class, they remember their teacher. Mine was called Mrs. Kennedy. Hey, Mrs. Kennedy. She was a legend. So yeah, I can say that she kickstarted a lot for me, definitely.
Excellent. So then, I mean, we'll mention X Factor. You're probably sick of talking about it, but...
Not at all. Very proud. Actually, just in the background, because I'm actually starting to redecorate in here, but I had all my like discs and things in the walls that you'd normally put in a man cave. And yeah. Just here. So this wasn't set up, by the way, guys.
Simon Cowell. Is it Simon Cowell? Or just off screen?
It's actually my winning mug. I've got there. It's so good, like literally. But no, ask away, dude. Very, very, very proud of that moment in time for me.
So what was that? I mean, how did that, obviously it was it's a massive pressure situation. Yeah. I mean, it was, what year was it? 2005. I mean, that was 2005, wasn't it? So it was the second series of X Factor. So it was really early on. The show was absolutely huge. I mean, it was just like, it just smashed the whole of it's a popular culture at that time. What was it like being in the spotlight of that at that time?
It was strange. It was amazing. It was scary.
I mean, you smashed it, in fairness.
Excited. Oh, thank you very much. I had a good 4 to 5 years doing like performing work in men's clubs with two of my closest friends. We were called Destiny, great name. She's called Tracy Lyle, and then Tracy Murphy, and they're a couple, and they've been doing the circuit now for over 20 odd years. And I joined them when I was 16, and they took me to Germany to do the army barracks and things like that. And what was great about that is that I was able then to learn my craft, because a lot of like great, great, great singers that are out there that are from that ilk will tell you it's not easy to perform in something like a workman's club, because if they don't like you and you don't engage them, they will let you know, and then you will not be coming back on after bingo. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So my dad did a lot of that. My dad did a lot of that in his late years. He was a singer, and he did all the workman's clubs. Yeah, it's a tough old station. Like
it is like you'll get, if they want to throw you a dirty look, like, oh, if you sit in someone called Jim Seat, who's been sat there for 40 years. I did that. I came down after the first 45 minutes with the two girls, and we sat down with three piece harmony trio, and I sat in Jim Seat, and a woman says, "Excuse me," I said, "Yes, love." She's like, "Jim's been sat there for 45 years." I was like, but his backside must be killing him. She was not impressed. And she said, go.
Get out. Red card.
I did.
Red
card. And for that next 45 minutes, for the second half when we come back on, I made sure I made a beeline if it was a love song or something, or a dancey song, to get her up and dance. She forgave me, but this is many, many years ago. But
she could be angry with you.
Best times in Wigan. Exactly. But that was my first thing. You're having a joke with him. But it was all banter as well. She wasn't angry. It was more kind of like a joke.
Yeah,
banter.
Yeah, yeah.
I miss those days, but that set me up for the X Factor. I'm not saying I was majorly prepared, but I was 21. I was at a good age. And before I knew it, it went so fast. I just remember walking in my first audition, sung Sacrifice by Elton John. And my second song was You Make Me Feel Brand New by The Stylistics. And just sung the song the best I could. And that was the thing that I adapted. That's all that I focused on every time I got through the rounds, was just sing the song the best I can. What will be, will be. And before I knew it, I was on the show. And that was the craziest time for me, because all my family and friends were so proud. I knew it was the second year of the show. It was relatively new. But my God, what a journey it's been since.
I'm going to say, because you come out of the X Factor into there's a little period up until, say, like 2011, where you had that, sort of first, it was all music, it was all about getting, you know, making albums and getting out there and gigging and all that kind of stuff. What was the sort of highlight of that period, that time period? Because I'm sort of only picking that because 2011, you go into the musicals and do some stuff there, you sort of diversify a little bit, but that initial post X Factor period, what were the highlights of that time?
Oh, wow. For me, was, this is even before like the whole social media digital age that we live in now was anywhere. You know, if you wanted to find out what anyone was doing, it was either you watch television or Digital Spy or MySpace, if you had a MySpace account.
MySpace, yeah. Where,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that's the, whereas now, I used to spend 6 months of the year in Asia, and no one would know that. So if I went quiet in the UK, if I wasn't then recording the next album, because it was a 3-album deal with the label, I would spend doing a lot of shows and promoting and building, it's the brand, isn't it? And when you're signed to a label, you become the brand as well. So I was in Malaysia, Taiwan, South Korea, Hong Kong, China, Vietnam, Philippines.
What's that
just
like?
All over. And it was incredible. It was amazing. I mean, very good. And I didn't bring any of my family over at that time, but it's a whirlwind, isn't it? You know, you're over there, you're performing. For me, I was always so humbled, because I'm like, I'm in a different country and they are coming to the show. they want to see me. You turn up in the airport, which loads of artists will say the same. The first time they go to a different country and they go to the airport and it's just filled with people because the show's so big. You just, in awe, you just can't believe it. You're taken back, like, they're here for me. And that just, it gives you even more hunger. So yeah, so the fact I got to travel the world and meet loads of new people, and yeah, I just had so many.
I mean, how many people travel with you? What was the sort of bubble?
Yeah, it was only a small entourage. If I was doing a show, it would be everywhere, every show I do, I always make sure I have my sound engineer, because my sound is everything. It determines your next show, bottom line.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm a stickler about that. So it'd be sound engineer. If I'm performing, like, with you can have, you know, your backing track in terms of just music in general, but I'd bring a live guitarist as well just to change it up. I'd have a backing vocalist and I'll have my tour manager. And I guess back in the day, you'd probably have like a label rep or something like that that just wanted to go.
Yeah.
We'll come, we'll watch everything for you, Shane. We'll look after you.
Jolly up, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Started getting into musicals then at in sort of 2011 sort of time. What was that? How did you have to adapt to your singing style, or did you kind of draw on your school experience? I mean, you're obviously a lot older at this point, but
yeah,
how did it differ?
Well, the thing was, it was my old manager at the time, and he approached me with Rock of Ages, and you know, it was when I was dodgy filmed in the top tier in America where you shouldn't be filming. Someone sent it to him, said this is a great show, it's on Broadway. And if anyone had seen Rock of Ages, it was brilliant, set on Sunset Boulevard, and it was just full of like Ariel Speedwagon, Bon Jovi songs, and Journey, and just everything. The Final Countdown was in there, and so
classics.
Yeah, and when it came over, my manager just said, you know, would you like to go for an audition for this? I said, let me have a look at it. I said, well, I'm not a rock singer, and if you're going to do a rock show, you've got to have something to back it up. Now, my voice can be quite gentle, but then I've got all my falsetto, but I know I can push, but you know your limits. So for me, I was like, well, absolutely, because I always wanted to do acting as well. And I always believed, you don't know if you're any good at anything unless you try it. Simple as. And the worst you can get is a no. So I went there and I learned the songs they wanted me to learn. And then I did the dialogue and then I did it. And it was quite nice because the casting director was like, thank you, Shane. That was great. And to hear that, I was like, thank you. And he went, now can you do it in American? And I was like, like, you do it in an American accent. I was like, it's American. Ah, okay. I'm sorry, I didn't prepare it in an American accent. Rather than, like, they'll probably say, well, can you just do it now? And I'm like, they went, well, if you like, well, you're gonna come back. And I was like, oh great, yeah, I'll come back. Of course, yeah, I'll learn it now properly, American accent. You know, I didn't think, I'm so sorry. Went away and I was on YouTube for days looking at like American accents and stuff, and the character I ended up playing was Stacey Jacks. And what was great about it was that, because it's so, like, obviously the Irish going over to America years ago anyway, it's so mixed. And you know yourself with the Irish accent, you can go into it and it's more like an American accent. And you can get, like, in between the two. And I thought, don't judge me by that accent, by the way, guys. I just try to mesh the two. American and Irish a little bit. God knows how it sounds. But I did it. And luckily enough, my character was drunk all the time because it was beyond his heyday. He knew he was the biggest star in the world. He had still the glam rock makeup on, the big hair. So I acted drunk with it and I made it more kind of like a slur. And it never got picked up, which I'm kind of guessing they thought, yeah, it works.
It's done
so
right. Take that win.
That. Exactly.
So that was kind of, that was the sort of musical stuff you were doing.
I did the War of the Worlds for Jeff Wayne as well.
You're gonna say you did the other one as well, yeah. Yeah,
which was amazing. Had Herbie Flowers on bass. It was just Jeff Wayne with his orchestra and then my character was the artilleryman, and it was quite funny actually, because I never knew that Jeff Wayne actually contacted my old manager back in the day. So, you know, my old manager, Mr. Walsh, and my label, and I never knew that he wanted me then to play the artilleryman. And it kind of came round again, and when they said that to me, I was like, oh, I never knew. And it wasn't my fault, but I was like, I'm so sorry. But it was like I said, but I'm honored that you've come back because you want me to play him for the last time. And I played the artilleryman, and if anyone's seen the show, you've got a hologram. It was Liam Neeson, and I got to be, obviously he's the hologram, but I was able to kind of interact with him, and great songs, and what a great experience with a load of fantastically talented people. So Yeah, two different things as well. Like that was like 20 minutes of dialogue. Ridiculous. So.
Right. So that was a great experience. That it sounds like, you know.
Great for my confidence. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. But then it's 2015, you did your album Closer.
Yes.
And then, so the start of 2015, you do that. And then kind of in, by the summertime, you're in Coronation Street. Or yeah. How did that year took a turn?
No, massively. It happened like that. So I didn't want to click too far to click the microphone in case I went, ah. It happened like that.
We'll put it in post.
Oh yeah, you know, can I get the Batman power and all that? Look,
power.
But no, I was working on the album. I was writing it with Mike Stock, and it was a lot of great songs there with other songwriters as well. Really, really proud of the album. Really proud of the bulk of work, and it was all for the fans as well, because it was fan funded, that one, because they wanted another album. And it was great, and I was so humbled by that. Yeah, and me and Mike created a great album, and then. Out of the blue, there was a call to my management that Coronation Street casting department want to see me. And I'll tell you how it came about, in a sense, when that phone call came. It was because on my social media, there was a lot of fans saying, congratulating me on my new role. And I'm thinking, oh, working on a new album, maybe. And it was like, no, congratulations on your new Coronation Street role as the bad boy. And I'm thinking, I'm not in Coronation Street. So I Googled bad boy Coronation Street characters, and I was like, ah, okay, there's a bad boy in it whose character's called Callum, who got killed by the Platts. And his name in real life is Sean Ward, the actor. And I've gone, ah, I get it. Sean Ward, Shane Ward, very easy mistake. And because it generated a lot of interest and a lot of people talking about it, it got to Coronation Street, and then that's how they approached my management. So mental, I know.
That's mad.
Everything happens for a reason, for sure.
And
my manager said, would you like to go for it? And I said, 100%, because you never pass up an opportunity for something like Coronation Street, a legendary show, an institute, 50 years, and just an amazing company to work for as well.
Well, you must be tempted to go and try and find Sean Ward's parent to say, thank you for calling your son Sean.
Oh, I did that to you yesterday. I wrote this story and I says, actually, I've not even thanked Sean yet, but cheers, Sean. Sean was great in Our Girl. He was in Our Girl for many, many years with Michelle Keegan. So, yeah, cheers, Sean. You know, the warts. Up the warts.
That was quite a tough role you played there, wasn't it? I mean, mental health is something very close to my heart. I suffer from depression, anxiety, and I've got some experience with some friends that we've lost to suicide and things like that. So it's something that's actually must have been a very challenging but rewarding role. I've read a lot of things where people have thanked you for portraying that in such a high profile setting. Yeah. I mean, what was that like to do that? I mean, what was that like to play that role?
Even just hearing you talk about it like there is, for me, it was instantly scary, because when I agreed to take on that story, first of all, when you get approached by it, you know, that they're thinking of doing, obviously, this storyline for Aiden, it's a complete mixture of emotions. I spoke to my mum. I spoke to my partner, Sophie, and said, how would you feel if I did this? And their instant reaction was like, no, because we love Coronation Street. You're great in it, and we don't want you to go. And I had to go away and have a good think about it. And I was speaking a lot to Kate Oates, who was the producer at the time. And I just knew in myself, it was like, I thought, I feel like I'm never going to get this opportunity again to be able to tackle such an important taboo that needs to be spoken about a hell of a lot more. And I just knew at that moment that I didn't want to pass it up. So I said, yes, I'll do it. Knowing that, you know, yeah, of course, I'm never going to be able to go back to the show unless they do a Bobby Ewan and put me in the shower and it was all a dream. You know,
up through the plug hole.
Back in the day. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Can you imagine? It was all a dream. But for me, it was more, I knew that when I made the decision, it was the right decision to make. And then came the seriousness of, okay, right, now we need to do our homework. Now we need to, because one thing that's been recognized as well by the public is just how well it was handled. Because that was the most, that was the scariest thing, is that you have to handle it with such care and delicacy.
Yeah.
Because it is real and it's affecting people now. You know, we all know someone, like you just said there, and a lot of people that do suffer with depression. So, and we worked closely with Calm Mind, the Samaritans, met with people, unfortunately, that, you know, I've lost someone through it. And then when that final month come to shoot those scenes, it was difficult because, like you said, we just didn't know how it was going to be perceived. But as
got received so well, didn't it? I mean, we got awards for the
yeah, which you know, it's like, and it was nice, you know, that of course it's incredible to be recognized like that. But that wasn't the objective, you know, which was right for us. We was like, that's what soaps are there for, to tackle all these subjects. And it was done incredibly, and it was moving. It breaks my heart now, even just to watch it. Like I was preparing my show reel, my new show, because I did future things like films and stuff just recently. So I'll just, you know, editing some of my new parts in there, and I'm coming across my final scenes, and you watch it, and you're thinking, because you have to go to that place for that person at home who, you know, who heartbreakingly is going through something similar, who has those thoughts. You have to make sure that, especially me in that final scene, I was in a place that I hope I never have to be. And when I created that final scene with Kate Oates, because the final scene was just meant to be the pub, the camera was meant to pan to Aidan, and that was it. But I said, can I please, then when it pans to me and it goes dark, can it then come out and I'm in back in my, which is basically my home, my prison, my head, which is back in the flat. And it was scary because I've still got so many people now that tell me they've been there, that when they watched that made them talk. And then when a lot of people, when they watched the aftermath, which was incredible scenes as well, to see all the different reactions from people, which is totally right. Everyone reacts in different ways. You know, my dad was broken because he's the one who found me. My sister was the one who basically had a go at me, like, how could he, selfish, you know. But it's all that mixture of emotions, and it was just, yeah, I mean, just humbled and honored that they trusted me with that task. And yeah,
well,
yeah, it's even talking and now it
yeah, I can see, yeah,
I know I meet so many people all the time, I get so many messages on social media.
Yeah. No, it's something that I think that it's. I mean, raising the awareness and, as you say, breaking down the taboo of talking about it is something that's. It's getting better. We're getting better at it, you know. And I certainly think you aided that. So, fair play to you. Well done for that.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Thank you. But
obviously, as good as it was, it left you out of a job.
It did. So. I know, and it did, and it was heartbreaking because, like I said, even that month leading up to it, I was in certain scenes in the bistro, and just before take, I'd break down crying because I knew of the pressure of this storyline that was already a huge weight on my shoulders, because I wanted to get it right, because I wanted to help if I could in any way. Then it was the thought of, I'm leaving a great job. And then I'm looking at the table of the people that I've called my family for 3 years. And I'm looking at them thinking, not like I'm not going to see you again, but it's like, I'm not going to see you every day again. Cause
yeah.
It's every day, thing, isn't it? So it was a lot of emotions, but yeah. And then when I had no job, it was like, right. Cause the thing is, I think a lot of people think, oh, you've been on the soap for so long, you're just going to get the work, you're going to be looked after. And it's not about that. You know, you're going to get off with these parts on the plate. No, I'm not about that. And it's, that's probably why I'm still going after 15 years, because I'll never stop. Yeah. And now I've got my little girl, you know, she's my purpose anyway. Now she's the main purpose why I do what I do, but I always want to work and I'll always go for it. But yeah, it was a scary period when I had no work. Yeah.
But you got back into, you're getting back into music. So you're getting sort of left you to get moved back into your first love. So what's the, you got the new material. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, the reason why these are all set up is not just for effect. I actually just did an audition self-tape just before this. So I'm sweating right now. There's no window open. I've got these lights beaming on me. But it's finding, like, you know, touch wood, if this acting goes, obviously this audition goes great, then I'll have that pretty soon. That'll probably come out next year. But my music, yeah. Now I'm signed with Peer Publishing. I am writing for other artists, a lot of artists in Korea and things like, you know, you get the basically the emailing list, which we're all on there, which goes worldwide to so many writers over Peers, like 28 countries. So you don't feel that special when you get an email saying, can you write? I'm like, yeah, okay. So it's pot luck, but it excites me. So I've been writing a lot of stuff and then one or two things jump out and I'm like, that's for me. So then that kickstarted me starting to write my part of my new album. So yeah, there's a lot of really, really exciting things that's going to be coming up that will hopefully start getting announced. I can't say, I was just about to say, but it's like the probably... No. But I'm working already now at the minute on material with two great producers. People will know exactly who they are when they hear. So I'm working with two great producers at the minute, creating tracks. I have a third potential opportunity with some producers that I've worked with over the years that actually I worked on my second and third album with. So it'll be exciting to do some more stuff there. I'm just trying to keep the creativity going, and you know, my missus has bought like these and now, like, which is like crystals, and you know what, she came in the other day, she went, do you think they're working? And I'm like, I honestly think they do. You know, you've got to put the positive out there to get it back. So
absolutely.
So I'm just really excited, and I think now I'm working on stuff. I get UTA now I've signed to, they are an incredible worldwide company, and now knowing that I am actually going to be getting good tours again next year, so it's all kind of coming together now. So
fantastic. We always ask for a recommendation for a music that you may be listening to, or something people should check out. What would be your recommendation?
Oh, what you should check out. I think in my head, I was born in the wrong era, to be honest. Like all the stuff, like you go through my, I was going to say iPod then, but you go through my iTunes. And it's just like the singers that I said at the start of this interview of all the people that I listen to. It's just like Elvis Presley, of course. And, you know, like Roy Orbison, Tom Jones all the time, absolute legend. Stylistics, The Shy Lights. But if there's anyone new, I guess you listen to. I think The Weeknd is brilliant, but I don't know. I mean, I'm a singer, you know. So I really love great vocalists. So I'm just trying to think if there's anyone out there. Like, unless you could recommend someone for me, because I feel like I've been in this cave for so long.
That's not how this works.
Okay, right. Here we go. Let me someone that's out there that I think is a great vocalist. Can't answer it. I think we've got to stay tuned for that one. I tell you what.
No worries. All right.
I'll message you on social media out of the blue.
Okay, we'll do that. Listen, Shane, thanks very much for joining us, and good luck with it all. It sounds like you're getting some really exciting stuff happening for you. So thanks for joining us. All right. Take care of yourself. Stay well. Stay safe.
Thank you so much, guys. Absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. And yeah, I'll see you guys soon.